You're listening to Stages, and my guest this evening is Emma Mae Gibson, or her alter ego, Betty Grumble. And she's here to talk about her show, which is playing at the Red Rattler at the moment, every evening at 7:30. Well, tonight and tomorrow night. You don't have long, but it will be back. But we will also be talking about her life and where she's come from and how she came to be Betty Grumble. Welcome, Emma Mae Gibson.
Yes. Hello.
Hello. So we'll get into talking about, you know, when Betty came to life. But where are you from? Where did you grow up?
I'm a Sydney person. I grew up on Bidjigal country here in Kogarah, which is like southern Sydney, St George area. And I've always been a Sydney person, but I've moved around a lot to travel, to perform. But yeah, I always come back to Sydney. I really love Sydney's vibrant queer community, and that's just my home.
Yeah. So how did you grow up in a creative family? Like, were they influential to you as the person you are now?
Yeah, big time. My mother was, you know, an actor, and she studied at the Ensemble Theatre, and she's a nurse, and she's an aerobics instructor, and then a bodybuilder, and now she's a visual artist. Went to National Art School, so she kind of does everything. And my father's a GP, so in true like doctor form, he's got a musical streak, and we both actually had the same singing teacher when I was growing up. So my parents have been really supportive, fostering my creativity and giving me lots of opportunity to study. You know, I went to 5, 6, 7, 8 dance land, and, you know, and that's given me my craft today. Like, my body is I use my body as a medium to communicate on stage. So I'm really grateful for all the study I've been able to do, but also the kind of way I've educated myself by traveling and seeking out like-minded people.
I can see your mum in your performances, like the aerobics instructor and the bodybuilder, especially on the show last year at Griffin, and also during lockdown when you were performing your, you know, Facebook dance Grumble show. Or it was not just a show, but it was inclusive, which is so lovely.
Yeah. I think, during the strangeness we've all gone through, it's important to move our bodies, or even, I don't know, people just watching it and just breathing along with it, just to offer something that ruptured the narrative of, you know, everything we're all dealing with, and got us to move together. And it helped me, gave me a ritual, because, you know, all the nightclubs shut down. So where were we going to dance?
So how did Betty come to life for you?
So she's about 10 years old now, about a decade of working with her. And I was at university studying performance art and theatre, and I formed a gang with these other women, Charlotte Farrell and Claire Testoni and Jess Falcourt, and we all were making really rat baggy kind of strip shows / feminist performance art, and then going and performing them at burlesque nights or nightclubs. And that's really where those days were formative in figuring out how I wanted to be in space, and also making work really quickly. We were performing every weekend, and then I branched off, and there was this opportunity to do a queer talent quest upstairs at the Oxford.
Oh yes.
And I don't even know how I would have heard about that, but I just rocked up, and kind of that's when I really put on the Grumble aesthetic, like, which is kind of decayed now.
Okay.
Like, you know, she used to always wear a wig, and she always used to look a particular way, move a particular way. But I guess she had to start like that for me to kind of be birthed out of her. But I ended up winning that talent contest. And then that gave me another gig at the Red Rattler, which is where I'm performing now, this new show. And I got to perform at this gig called Monster Gras, which is put on by Glitter Militia. That's just history. And then from there I was just able to meet all these wonderful other practitioners and really have the best opportunity to play with what I wanted to do in art on these dance floors and on these stages. Pushed back at the idea that performance had to be one particular way, and especially as a woman, that you had to behave a certain way. So I'm really grateful for having that opportunity all those years ago.
What is that line between performance and art?
Well, you mean the difference between performance art and theatre?
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Uh, I, It's such an interesting question, and I'm sure there is a better, more academic response that I could give. But when I there's just different ideas about how you are on stage, if it's a theatre work, or how you embody yourself, if it's performance art. Performance art might occupy a space where we are really doing and really being. You often employ task-based actions to really do things to your body. It's like a different kind of attitude, but I really enjoy the collision of the two worlds because I am a theatre nerd and I love it. I love creating worlds and I love the magic of it. So I think it's like a class thing as well. Like, I think we have a really weird relationship with the theatre and how things are meant to be in Australia. And it's really exciting when people challenge that and challenge status and yeah. I'm really interested in the space in between things, but I don't know, everything's up for grabs as long as it's done lovingly.
So did you travel and study? What kind of study did you do?
Yeah, I just sought out practitioners that turned me on. I went and studied with Anne Bogart in New York and the City Company and the Suzuki Method, which I also studied here with Shy and Ninefold and Clowning in Buffon and, you know, Radical Performance Art Making with La Porta Nostra. It's Guillermo Gomez Pena and my mentored by Annie Sprinkle. So
yes.
There's a real, like, real amazing tapestry of practitioners. And I didn't get into drama school. I would love to do that every day. But I just kind of made my own drama school by on the dance floor and seeking out workshops, which I still love to do that, keep feeding the old body and brain. There's just so much opportunity out there. Yeah.
You're not afraid to push the line of things and nudity on stage, but it's more than just nudity. It's sort of the shock of the exposed body, but then you can turn things on their head. Like, how do you play with an idea and how do you like find that line and then push it? And is there somewhere you won't go? I don't think there is.
I mean, it's interesting when that gets reflected back to me, like that I am such a fleshy body for such a long time in my career. It's a bit like, you know, I really enjoy playing with strip. It comes really naturally to me to be so nude, and also especially, you know, to play with my sex energy or the idea of what the erotic is or what tantra could be on stage. But for me, most people see a body, a fleshy body, and get over it within like 15 seconds. And I'm never taking my clothes off or exposing myself to shock people. It's more like if Betty Grumble's my kind of sex clowning persona that makes me feel powerful, that's her joy energy and that's where her pleasure is. And that just happens to be the way that I'm expressing it in this moment. But there's so much taboo and shame around the body as well, I guess. I was naturally drawn to it given my own experiences of kind of patriarchal violence in the world that I wanted to protest, and my body was a weapon for that. So it became really immediate in the room how audiences felt about liberation. If you started to, I don't know, take your clothes off and cartwheel around and be joyful with your body.
It kind of allows other people to be more liberated.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's it like up there to you know, you must hear or feel all kinds of things when that transformation happens for you, or the undressing, or the, you know, whatever it is. Like, can you feel that energy in the audience? And what's that like?
Yeah, it's different every time. Energy's real. Energy's powerful. And you're never doing a show by yourself. It's like you're doing it with the energy. It's a conversation that's happening with the audience. So some nights, like even in this run, some nights it's a more like people, they might be more conservative in different ways. And so you feel that energetically and it just becomes a different kind of conversation. Or other people might be enraptured by certain things that you're doing and then energy moves in a different way. It's a real trip to negotiate shame sometimes because it's still so prevalent in our society, because the oligarchs have done such an amazing job of kind of tricking people into being ashamed of their bodies, therefore not connected to their creative critical thinking in ways that I think like a lot of queer people are, and a lot of more, you know, people that have avant-garde spirits. You know, we're just challenging the idea that there's only one way of being, because there isn't. We are our bodies, and we are not our bodies, and we really don't know where they begin and end, and it's fun to play in possibility. And it's a long, long lineage of especially femme performance artists that have used their bodies as political sites to push back against puritanical ideas of how women are meant to behave. And I'm really excited to continue that legacy.
Is she someone that takes over? You know, you kind of channel her?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I often describe her as a war mask, especially at the beginning of my practice. I really put her on in a way where she was quite disturbing and quite aggressive in some ways, and probably really frightening for some people, but then for other people that was a real turn on. So she definitely helps me channel energy, and she makes me feel, you know, like I created the sister energy. She was a healing balm for me as well.
So tell us about the show that you're doing at the moment. Enemies of Grooviness Eat Shit. Yay.
It's like a radical disclosure of personal pain. Oh. And I kind of take off the mask.
Well, you kind of did that in your last show at Griffin, actually, didn't you? You reveal the underbelly of you.
I'm interested in that the slide. I talk a lot about composting in this show, like composting myself, composting Betty, composting concepts, and the concepts are grief and pleasure and justice. And I speak about the death of one of my greatest friends and collaborators, Candy Royale, and I had to use her and Annie Sprinkle on a shrine to help me dive into the grief around her death, but also the grief around my experience with intimate partner violence. So, and, you know, and how that reflects my whole kind of methodology around, you know, wanting all bodies to be free and wanting to puncture the silence around what is a real issue we have with men's violence, not only to our bodies, but to the earth body. So it's big, big, big stuff, but somehow in an hour we have fun and we move a lot of things around, but it's feeling good. It's super new, so
yeah,
it's still becoming. But
did you kind of go, I want to write this and how am I going to do it, or does it sort of come together?
Oh, it's been really challenging because of lots of different things, but COVID being one of them, so you kind of don't have your regular ways to move ideas around in front of an audience, or even just practice being in front of an audience.
Yeah.
So maybe that was good that I had to kind of go really internal for a really long time. And then it's hard to know whether you're even moving forward in the writing process. You know, am I moving forward, or is it just this whirling circle of information? And it's like, not until you're up on stage in front of people making these decisions that you've agreed on with your tech and with the I work with a really good friend of mine, Megan Holloway, who's an amazing performer, and she's my assistant in the show in her drag persona, Craig, and it's just so nice to have. I have a team around me now, and I've never really had that before, because I'm being produced by Performing Lions now, so
yeah,
shows up. It's good. It'll keep on changing, but so it should, because I do.
Yeah. So was there a pivotal point in your career that was sort of instrumental to you as your development as a creative? Like, was there a point that you went, yes, this is what I want to do? Or like, did you have a day job before you became, like, how did you evolve?
Like, I had lots of little jobs that creative people kind of do to have,
have to do.
Kids party entertainer and a swimming teacher and some other things that I won't mention. But I just made stuff happen. And then I think the turning point probably was, oh, I'm going to make a full-length show and I'm going to take it to Fringe.
Fringe,
and then I took it to the Edinburgh Fringe. I'm like, oh, this is, I can do this. I can hold space for an hour, and it's always what I wanted to do. And then other opportunities came out of that. Like, I got to work with the Sisters Grimm, and, you know, I just love collaborating with people and want to do more of that. But, yeah, I think the decision to make a full-length work, and then also to take work into like more art gallery spaces as well as a nightclub, start putting on my own events and parties. So you really just got to decide to do things and then stumble your way through it and learn while you're doing it. It's exciting.
How do you determine when you've gone too far? Do you ever go too far? Have you gone too far and gone, no, where have you gone, Betty? Come back.
Yeah. Oh, I've made like some lazy decisions when I've made short works that I use particular symbols or made artistic decisions that now I reflect upon. This is like, you know, a long time ago. I'm like, oh, I could have done better conceptually there. That wasn't fully thought through. But in terms of like going too far, I don't know. This show feels precious and I guess dangerous in some ways, because I really have been trying to consider how to be a good carer for people, because there's definitely people in the crowd who've experienced violence. And so to get up on stage and speak about it, I really want to make sure that we are like, when we pull the, you know, we're opening the window at the beginning of the show, I want to make sure the window gets, you know, closed and the shutters pulled down before people leave. So we're safe and good with our stuff. You know, it's not like opening up wounds for people. I'm more interested in a healing space where people feel recognition and possibility. So in terms of like going too far, it's like, how do you take care of people when you're talking about what is a shared experience of pain?
They're big issues that you're dealing with, death and violence and things that are a part of an Australian identity that maybe you're trying to change or make us aware of. Or
I've really been thinking about how, like, what culture is and how culture is vital for us to connect with spirit and care about the land and our ecology and each other, and how kind of, you know, white patriarchal, white supremacist society has done a really good job of making white people or non-Indigenous people think that they don't have a culture that can connect them to communities, because we do, obviously. But I'm very interested in what my culture is. You know, a lot of us have parents that were immigrants, so we're kind of part of a diaspora where they didn't teach us their language because they were told to assimilate to survive. So, yeah, it's interesting, especially then us being Australians living on this country. We do, like, the Indigenous people, the only people on the planet that don't have treaty. It's a very strange country to negotiate being on and with respectfully. So, I'm interested in art and gathering spaces as a way for us to have a spiritual experience
and to communicate these
things.
Big things. But it's like the world's going through something right now. It's like, you know, we can talk about hard stuff together, and we must, so we can be really open and strong for when people who need us to be in action.
Well, you are certainly in action, Emma Mae Gibson. Thank you so much for joining me this evening to talk about your show and your life.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And that was Betty Grumble. You think about